The peddler moved his body partly around and spoke with energetic but gloomy bitterness. "And yet you see it, Captain Wharton. You see it where the setting sun shines clear upon you. The air you breathe is clear and fresh from the hills before you. Every step you take leaves that hated gallows behind, and every dark hollow and every shapeless rock in the mountains offers you a hiding place from the vengeance of your enemies. But I've seen the gibbet raised when there's no place of refuge offered. Twice I've been buried in dungeons where, fettered and in chains, I've passed nights in torture, looking forward to the morning's dawn that was to light me a death of infamy. The sweat has started from limbs that seemed already drained of their moisture. And if I ventured to the hole that admitted air through the grates of iron to look out on the smiles of nature which God has bestowed for the meanest of all creatures, the gibbet has glared before my eyes, like an evil conscience harrowing the soul of a dying man. Four times have I been in their power, besides this last, but twice did I think my hour had come. It is hard to die at best, Captain Wharton, but to spend your last moments alone and unpitied, to know that none near you so much as think of the fate that is to you the closing of all that is earthly, to think that in a few hours you are to be led from the gloom, which, as you dwell on what follows, becomes dear to you, to the face of day, and there to meet all eyes fixed upon you as if you were a wild beast, and to lose sight of everything amidst the jeers and scoffs of your fellow creatures. That, Captain Wharton, that is indeed to die.
At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, said the gentleman, taking up a pen, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute, who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir.
Are there no prisons? Asked Scrooge.
Plenty of prisons, said the gentleman, laying down the pen again.
And the Union workhouses? Demanded Scrooge. Are they still in operation?
They are. Still, returned the gentleman. I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigour, then? Said Scrooge.
Both very busy, sir.
Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course, said Scrooge. I'm very glad to hear it.
As the nights pass, so pass the days. The year itself passes. Again, I hear the rustling of autumn leaves. The light of the eyes is fading. Memory is in the heart asleep. Everything sleeps, and I know not if I live or am already dead. For so aimless I wander in the world, no longer weep nor laugh. Fate, where art thou? Fate, where art thou? There's none of any sort. Dost grudge me good fate, O God? Then send it bad as bad. Thus speaking, the artist suddenly shuddered and turned pale. A convulsively distorted face gazed at him, peeping forth from the surrounding canvas. Two terrible eyes were fixed straight upon him. On the mouth was written a menacing command of silence. Alarmed, he tried to scream and summon Nikita, who was already snoring in the anteroom. But then he suddenly paused and laughed. The sensation of fear died away in a moment. It was the portrait he'd bought, and which he'd quite forgotten. The light of the moon, illuminating the chamber, had fallen upon it, and lent to it a strange likeness to life. He began to examine it, moistened a sponge with water, passed it over the picture several times, washed off nearly all the accumulated and encrusted dirt and dust, hung it on the wall before him, wondering yet more at the remarkable workmanship. The whole face had gained new life, and the eyes gazed at him so that he shuddered and, springing back, he exclaimed in a voice of surprise, "It looks with human eyes!" The flood of the life stream began to set again, to rise and inundate Western Europe. Floating off the galleys and caravels of King Alfonso of Portugal, and sending them to feel their way along the coasts of Africa. A little later, drawing the mind of Prince Henry the Navigator to devote his life to the conquest and possession of the unknown. in his great castle on the promontory of Sagres, with the voice of the Atlantic thundering in his ears and its mists and sprays bounding his vision, he felt the full force of the stream and stretched his arms to the mysterious west.